Welcome to the Competent Pastor Podcast.
A podcast by pastors, for pastors, that starts with one question.
What is the most important skill of a competent pastor?
We're your hosts. I'm Michael Danner.
And I'm Rachel Ringenberg-Miller.
Today, we're excited to have Tori Bonners on the Competent Pastor Podcast. Tori is the pastor of Sojourners Mennonite Fellowship in Belfast, New York. She also works as one of the chaplains in a small hospital nearby. These small towns and farming communities still throw surprises her way, but after completing four semesters of clinical pastoral education and level one trauma centers, she's thankful that now life often operates at a slower pace. Tori graduated from seminary in 2021, completing her pastoral internship in 2020, which, yes, means that the entirety of her formal church ministry experience has been in a world shaped by COVID. Before seminary, she spent a few years working in the outdoor field and had many adventures handling snakes, finding benthic microinvertebrates in freezing cold rivers, and managing herds of horses. Her current pastor self has also been shaped by many summers of service in various camp ministry roles.
So, Tori, tell us a little bit about you, about your call to ministry, and how things are going with you in this call that you have that seems kind of dualistic.
Yeah, thanks all for having me. I think my call to ministry is kind of a meandering road, for sure. But to answer that second question first, this dualistic call. That is, yeah, the pastor and chaplain and finding that balance. I think it's good. Being a chaplain, makes me a better pastor. And being a pastor helps to get that ministry celebration with people that you often don't get in chaplaincy and walking with people for that longer term. And so I appreciate what both of them bring to life and the things that I'm able to bring into those ministries. And the meandering road of my call to ministry started with camping ministry at a church camp when I was 15 and 16 years old. I started working at the camp that I grew up going to. And that camp in particular was founded by teenagers in the church. They started raising money because they said they need a place they can call their own and go to for retreats. They were tired of going other places, and that camp continued to be managed. And as teens, we were trusted to do a lot more there than I think we would other places. And so really appreciated the discipleship that that brought, and started to think about, could this be the rest of life for me? Could I make a living with camp ministry and working in that? And could I continue to serve in this way? And so I started looking at colleges for that. My undergraduate degree is a Bachelor of Science in Outdoor Recreation. Started to really discern where that life would lead to get a full-time job in any sort of camp position, kind of jump around to seasonal positions first. And so I will say that the people who formally called me into like this church, this more formal church ministry, were ones that even if I'm pastoring there, may not step into the church. They were folks that came up to me as we worked together in these more secular environments in my seasonal roles. And they said, hey, this is what's going on outside of here in my life. And I don't know what to think about it, and I don't know what to do about it. And I'm not sure what I think about God or prayer, but will you pray with me? So it was that heart of walking alongside people through life that led me to seminary. So lots of other pieces in there could be said too of the youth group that I grew up in and the ways that they taught me how to study scripture and put me in positions of leadership as well, and different camp ministry roles that I kept moving into more leadership terms as well. But yeah, it's the people that came up to me and asked me to care for them. Yeah.
Where did you go to seminary?
I went to Denver Seminary.
Okay.
So not Anabaptist by any means. I think I was the only Mennonite there on campus. But appreciated the foundation of biblical understanding, biblical scholarship that Densem brought. It's also their chaplaincy program is really highly regarded, and so grateful for the things learned there.
Yeah, cool.
How did you choose that particular seminary?
Well, I thought, if God's calling me to go to seminary, to further this call to ministry, I obviously this has to be some sort of outdoor leadership thing that God is calling me to. And so I Googled seminaries with outdoor leadership, and Denver Seminary popped up. And I looked at the course load I'd have to take and the classes that I fell in love with listed in their academic catalog were Greek and Hebrew and all of the theology classes. And I was like, these are the classes. Yes, this is what I want to be taking. But I was like, but outdoor leadership, all right, we're sold. And but as I started, I quickly was like, all right, this call to walk with people through life, it doesn't exactly fit this. And so I quickly switched to pastoral care and counseling was my concentration. And then I had to wrestle with what's this going to look like in a church context, a pastor of congregational care? What if I'm asked to be preaching? What if I'm asked to be the solo pastor somewhere? And how do I navigate that? Growing up in a world where women could not do that.
So when people were first coming to you in these camp settings and asking to talk or having questions and wanting to talk with you beyond, you know, the work life, how did that feel to you when someone asked if you would pray with them or if someone was wanting to share more deeply with you? Were you surprised? Did it just feel like this is what you were supposed to do? Like how did that kind of evolve for you?
It was that that first reaction of like, oh, yeah, we can do that. And just that, like, the prayer that happens in your mind as you go into that situation, like, okay, God, I don't know what this is, but help me, please. That sense of weighty holy space, which I think continues both in my work as a pastor and as a chaplain.
Can you tell us a little bit about how you divide up your time as chaplain and as pastor? What does that look like for you?
Yeah, I'm a half-time pastor, so about 20 hours a week. And then my role at the hospital is technically per diem. So it's kind of that as needed basis, but I have regularly scheduled hours with that. I'm at a small enough hospital with the department still growing that, even as per diem, that gets me regular days of the week. And I've kind of over time have made sure that's pretty steady, that this is going to be, I'm going to be at the hospital on Wednesdays and Saturdays. So, it's about 8 to 20 hours a week. So
here's the question of the Confident Pastor podcast. What, in your view, and so far you have a pretty diverse experience, so I'm interested to hear what you have to say here, but, in your view, what is the most important skill of a competent pastor?
Right. As chaplain, as somebody pastoral care and counseling, I would say that pastoral care aspect for sure, that knowing where your people are at, and how to sit down with them, how to be in that space, and let them lead the conversation. And that pastoral care, I think, affects, right, knowing your congregation as a whole and kind of where you're imagining that you can lead them and how, right, what ways you need to be leading them, what ways you can think through a future of a church together, right? We're talking about our mission statement right now. And so that's kind of on my mind as I'm answering this question of, all right, how much can we dive into that conversation? How much is this congregation ready for? And so I think that's a big piece of that pastoral care always runs through my mind in those conversations. And then also just the pastoral care piece that relates to sermon preparation and, right, big fan of the lectionary in that. I think all of Scripture has something to say. But, right, when I'm looking through the passage, I bring this, as my seminary professors called it, imaginative reading to the table of, let's think through the emotions that are present in this passage and how we might be reacting if we were a part of this story, if we were here. And, right, and so I think that allows us to have a more gentle tone with something like Jesus calming the sea, right? That do you not have faith, right? That just the exasperation that comes in that question, I think, that the gentle tone of, all right, guys, we've been here, we've done this before. Like, it's okay, we're all right now. Like, I'm here with you. And so I think that pastoral care, yeah, impacts everything we do as pastors.
Would you say that you allow people to lead the conversation, or that's part of kind of knowing where your people are at and how to allow them to lead the conversation? What does that look like in practice? I mean, I know all conversations are different, and of course you're kind of reading them as you go, but what are some things that you keep in mind to make sure that they're the ones kind of guiding it versus yourself? Either you know where it's supposed to end or you need to go.
Yeah. And right, that's where, you know, we can talk about that pastoral authority in some ways too there. And what does that look like on a practical level, and how do we balance that out and the words we're saying and the ways we're allowing the congregation to lead. And I think, you know, in my context here at Sojourners, it's we started as a house church, and so that, you know, as Mennonites we have a very low level hierarchy, and that's even more so here, whereas I'm doing the homily reflection sermon, whatever you want to call it, about twice a month at most, and the other weeks of the month congregants are doing that. And so it looks like saying, yeah, I'm a part of this congregation just as much as you are. And what do we all bring to the table? And right, that how are we discerning Scripture together? And I think in one-on-one conversations, it looks like knowing when I have to stay silent and just let them continue to work through. It looks like knowing when to refer them to somebody else for further care. It looks like saying, hey, let's schedule another time and pick this back up, right? That knowing when to end the conversation, as you mentioned. Yeah.
I'm struck by, one, how simple what you're saying is really captivating to me. This idea that you can't lead a congregation well unless you know them, and the way you know them is through effective pastoral care and engaging them at kind of a deeper level, almost from that space of a chaplain. And what I'm struck by is how many pastors don't do that. Or they think that they can lead a congregation by like coming up with the right strategy or reading the right book or coming up with the most attractional ministry that they can't. But you're talking about like, well, if you know people well, you spend time with them, you listen to them, you engage them where they're at on stuff that matters most, then it actually leading together as a congregation makes sense. Is that, am I hearing you right? Is that kind of how, because it seems, I'm in my head, and my CPE supervisor's in my head right now as you're talking, so I'll just say that. And he used to just go off on how pastors wouldn't even take the time to know, like, significant life events of their congregants, anniversaries, the death of a mother or father, the death of a, you know, significant life stuff. He goes, how many pastors don't even ever take care of that? And he was always wondering, like, how can you pastor if you don't know people? So what's your sense of, do you find your approach is unique with pastors you engage, or do you think more pastors are doing ministry this way and I just was too much in the 80s? Church growth movement.
I don't know. Are more pastors doing this? I think of the pastors that I've learned from, and I think in some ways, they have done this, and the deep care they have for the people they're serving. I think that shows up in lots of different ways. But I don't know. There are definitely times where it's the frustration there too, let's talk about these programs and church growth and let's talk about the ways that I'm seeing us grow and I'm the ways that I'm hoping for this thing to happen. And it's like, okay, like, what are your people telling you in that regard?
If I understood your story right, like, you were engaging people in secular spaces, and they were coming to you for care, and you were just being responsive to simple requests of walking with people, praying with people, stuff like that. Now you're in kind of the church, more formal ministry roles, like within the hospital setting, but also in the church setting. Do you still engage people outside of the church in the same way, or how is formal pastoral ministry in a congregation? I don't know if limit's the right way, but does that limit your engagement with other people? Because it seems like a real formative part of your life was engaging people in other places than church.
Yeah. The outdoor education spaces and my public high school and spaces like that. Yeah, it definitely was a huge impact in my leadership roles today. I think the ways that formal church ministry limits that some is that people have, right? I pastor in a small town, and so everybody knows I'm the pastor, and I think they put expectations on me because I am a pastor, like, oh, Tori's going to think this way and Tori's going to do this in her life. And, oh, I need to watch what I'm saying and what I'm doing, around her because she's the pastor. And right, it's that, it's being able to surprise people, I think is a fun part of that. You can totally say that, like, we're good, we're fine. That's the rub, right? Because I'm in this formal role, it does, put a damper on that in some ways.
Yeah, it seems to me what you're describing is very simple, but also very hard, because it requires you to have some patience with yourself and with the people to whom you are serving alongside with. I don't know how that strikes you, or if you have examples of when you have been working with your congregation and you're leading from that pastoral care point, and maybe there's some sort of struggle on wanting to move quicker than you feel like the people are ready.
Yeah, I think there's definitely multiple conversations that, right, it's the continual revisiting of, right, where do we as a church stand on this? What do we think about this? Are we ready to make this decision as a whole? And I think, you know, in churches, we move slow in things. In Mennonite churches, it's even slower. But when you're leading from this role of, let's know the people and, like, let's work together. And right, it's this consensus model of okay, what are we all thinking about this, and how do we want to proceed? And letting other folks tell me what to do. So, it's frustrating, yes, to answer your question.
Yes.
I mean, we wouldn't take you as a real person. We'd think you were a robot if you didn't say it was frustrating at some point.
So if we buy the idea that, like, pastoral care is a competency, that almost implies that you can learn to be better at it. So how do pastors, I'll confess, when I was early in pastoral ministry, the last thing I ever wanted to do was hospital visitation, some of those kinds of things. How can somebody learn to do this better?
I think every pastor should take CPE. but also just realizing that in most just regular seminary programs, you get maybe an intro to pastoral care class, right? That was, if I just had the strict MDiv, I would have one class about pastoral care. Yeah, being willing to engage more and learn more, take a therapeutic communication course, you know, be able to learn about how to respond to people well, so that they continue talking about things, or so that they feel heard and seen.
You said that, you know, every pastor should take a CPE course. What do you think is a major learning that you take away from your time doing CPE? What is something that's really stuck with you while you do congregational ministry?
Yeah, I think the process of verbatims, right? This, yeah. You know, you usually have five throughout the semester that visits you're writing about what as best you can remember word for word, and you bring them to your group, and your group goes through them and says, why did you respond this way in that moment? Or what was going through your mind in this moment? And so I think it's the intentionality I bring to conversations now from that process. That's a huge takeaway, being intentional about conversations. And then I think the other huge takeaway for CPE is, right, as a chaplain, even as a chaplain intern, chaplain student, in first units of CPE, as a chaplain, I bring a huge amount of authority to a room. And I need to acknowledge that and understand that in order to not abuse it. And so I sit down with the person, and again, it's letting them kind of lead the conversation, and it's asking these open-ended questions, and so that they don't feel that pressure to respond in a certain way. It's saying that, hey, like, you can tell me to go away. Like, I'm a person, you can do that, right? And so it's knowing the authority you bring into a place and knowing how to treat that well.
One of the things I always remember from CPE, or the thing I carry with me a lot, is this simple phrase, unless they tell me, I don't know, because I wasn't aware how much I would assume or project onto people. And then I used to think, at first I was like, verbatims are going to be useless. Why are we doing this? And then after you do it, it's like, oh my goodness, like, why did I do that there? And then you get revealed through the process, like, what my issues were. And you could see in a really real way, at least for me, at least, how the stuff I carried with me, if I didn't deal with it, showed up in all these interactions with people. And so I've not found any other way to get at that than that process, which was tedious, but also, I did one unit, so you probably did four, right? You did, yeah. So
yeah.
Just the one. But I agree with you. Every pastor should take CPE. I wish it was a requirement for seminaries, and it's really, really useful for all the reasons you talk about. But learning how to, like, flip on the curiosity switch and just be curious with people and listen has been really helpful to me, which I wouldn't have. I mean, it's before and after with relative to CPE. Before, I pastored one way. I did CPE in my sabbatical, and then afterwards, I was much better at that. And actually looked forward to pastoral care at that point, as before, it terrified me. I do think there's probably a lot of pastors that are terrified by it and haven't done some of the work, which makes it difficult. And
Yeah, knowing yourself and working out your own stuff before you try to care for others is important. CPE does that for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, such basic things that we should all know. And yet, like, when we're in the moment or we're feeling overwhelmed, I think it's so easy to kind of just, at least for myself, just kind of barrel through. And really the best thing I can do is stop, consider myself, and consider that the other person that I'm ministering with. Yeah.
I became a pastor in the 90s, right? And not in the Mennonite tradition. So the standard, like the gold standard for pastors when I was learning, was Rick Warren, was Bill Hybels, was the CEO megachurch pastor, right? Who had a pastoral care team or a ministry or a Stevens ministry or something else they managed, but it was much more executive, good speaker, you know, doing all those right strategic things. And it really, this idea that the pastor would know people was almost like, well, if you know people, the church is too small.
You're not doing it right.
That was like the water I swam in leadership wise. So this is really, really refreshing. And I do think Anabaptists get that right. Even in places where there's lots of Anabaptists, there's lots of small churches. There's not one big church. And there's a sense in which doing church together in community, this Galassan height, this shared life together is a little more conducive to the kind of leadership you're talking about. But even then, I think there's some ghost of this old church growth movement that sticks with a lot of pastors who have this sense that unless their church is getting bigger, they're not doing a good job. And what you're talking about almost is going deeper with folks to get to a place of health and vitality, as opposed to trying to figure out some church growth three steps to a bigger church kind of situation. So maybe I'm just reading, maybe I'm projecting all that into the conversation.
No, it's true. Like, you know, pastor the people in front of you, work on building a healthy community. Right. Your church is getting over 150 people. What's the time to start thinking about another church? I'm planting another church, which I think the history of Mennonites has done well. Our church is getting too big where we don't know everybody. It's time to think about what we're going to do with this amount of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, David Fitch once said that once a church hits 200, you can't do church the way the New Testament calls you to with more than 150 or 200 people.
Yeah.
You just can't do it. So you're exactly right.
So it's a little bit like restating or reframing, reimagining, whatever word you want to use, like what is a healthy, vibrant church, right? When we start kind of getting to the numbers thing, I was in a conversation with a pastor recently, and they were more lamenting the fact that most of the churches in their conference were, I think, 100 people or less, and kind of bemoaning that. And now hearing you talk, you know, that kind of has a different ring in my ear now as I think about what that pastor was saying versus what I'm hearing from you, right? That the people that are present are the people that, well, I was going to say matter, but I'm not sure that's the right word. But you're with the people who were there, and what happens after that happens after that. So that's, yeah, I'm just kind of thinking through what you said and hearing some other conversations as well. One question I have for you is, you talked about that open-ended questions, and I'm wondering, do you have like a go-to, like if there's some new pastor listening to this and they're terrified about doing pastoral care, what's your favorite starter when you enter a space with that pastoral care framework in mind?
Yeah, I think, you know, yeah, I'll answer that from my chaplain self, because that's more so where this comes from. But it is, right, I go and introduce myself. I'm Chaplain Tori. Like, it's my job here. If you want to talk about things going on right now, or if you have any religious needs, like, we can help with that. And, you know, sometimes that works really well. And, you know, or it's just, can you introduce me to the people in the room here with you? You know, how are you all connected? And then the question I found, especially if, you know, if people are trying to figure out what they want to ask me or what is the most helpful thing, it is, or just kind of rambling, and it's the winding conversation that, you know, it's the all right, I think we've gone down the road a ways, and this may not be any more helpful, but it's the what's the best thing your chaplain could do for you today, right? It's the reminding them of my role, what's the best thing I could do for them, and it's just allowing them to speak into that. What do they really need from me? So.
Yeah, what strikes me about that is you talked about the kind of the winding conversation, and it's kind of the you allowing for that or letting them lead the winding. It seems to me to be the exact opposite of what happens in a healthcare situation. So my husband's a nurse practitioner in the ER, and it drives him insane when he says, okay, why are you here today? And they're like, well, 5 years ago. And he's like, no, what brought you in here today? Like, the providers have no time for the winding, right? But the winding is part of their story. And it occurs to me that part of your role within the hospital system then is allowing people to process out loud and to tell their full story after maybe, for better or for worse, they've been shut down by their provider who just wants to know, what are you presenting? Like, why are you here? Mm-hmm. So I don't know what your experience is with hospitals and or yeah. with how you kind of navigate the two ways of thinking. There's probably more than two ways, but that's something that occurs to me.
Yeah, it's the right. You want to talk to me about things going on, right? It's my job to listen. And then yeah, that winding road often happens, and I think that's needed, right? Patients are lying there, and their mind's just running. Right? There's nothing to do, and if there's nobody in the room with them at the moment, right? That's they're going to think about all the things in life, and I think to a certain extent that is really helpful, and then. Right when you start to feel like the, all right, I might be at my end with this. And also, I think we're now going down the road of, is this helpful for you to be thinking about? And right, maybe asking that question sometimes, right, how is this helpful for you right now as you process, as you think about this? Yeah.
Thinking of an encounter, so I was doing an overnight call during CPE, and I get called down about 3 a.m. to the ER. I go down. You had to get dressed, put the suit on, you know, yeah. Go down there, walk into the room. The lady looks at me, the patient, and says, "You're not a priest." And I said, "No, I'm not a priest. I'm a Mennonite pastor. Is there any way that I can help you?" And she said, just as clear as a bell, "Get my priest."
Yeah.
So I left the room, and I just asked her what parish she was from, left the room and called her priest, who refused, ironically, to come out at that hour. So, yeah, it's a clear answer to that question, how can I help you? That was about the clearest one I ever had. Get my priest.
Yeah. What's the best thing you're traveling to do for you? Get my priest. All right.
I can help you. Yeah, you can get my priest.
Get out of my room. Yeah.
And so you do. Like, all right. Yeah. Yep. I imagine so. Yeah, between pastoral ministry, and also doing chaplaincy work, that you also encounter people at various points in their life, very difficult stuff. I'm thinking in terms of even vicarious trauma that you might experience. How do you care for yourself as a pastor and as kind of a healing person in the midst of these two roles as chaplain and congregant? I only did one at a time. I did CPE, and then I went back to pastoral ministry. But you do them at the same time. How do you balance that, or how do you care for yourself in the midst of that?
Yeah, I did my first two units of CPE were in 2021. So I was in Colorado Springs during the Delta wave of COVID, which was kind of a nightmare. And then my second two units of CPE I did. While I was serving here I was quarter time at the moment. At that point, I was quarter time pastor, and then I was doing two units of CPE. And, you know, all in level one trauma centers where I was for those units. And so That was a lot. I think there was a lot of that vicarious trauma for sure, in just all the things you absorb. It's having my own therapist was super helpful in caring for myself, having my own spiritual director. And now I think I'm even more aware of that, in my less hours and in my chaplain role. But if I've had a hard shift, it's the, okay, what do I need to do, to decompress from this? I have a drive on the way home. I commute into the hospital. And so that drive is helpful for decompressing. And then there's also, you know, a lakeside, or just even walking around the grocery store on the way home, doing a hike the next day if I can, right? Those places and spaces where I can come back to myself a little bit so that I can serve the next day.
Yeah. How would you say that your chaplaincy impacts your congregational ministry, and then vice versa? Like, how do those things intersect?
Yeah, I think if I haven't done a good job of decompressing, my congregation notices. Right, they notice that I'm caring more that week, that Sunday, so that's certainly there. They also acknowledge that it brings the gift of making me a better pastor, just the being open to the ways that the Spirit works, and knowing that the mystery of life, of what happened, not knowing the mystery of life, but knowing like what happens at the end of life, right? That those mysterious moments of you don't know what's happening with the person, and they're reaching out for somebody else. And there's a great mystery of the end of this life and the beginning of eternity and the beginning of next that, you know, you don't know how to define. And so being open to that mystery in our own faith is a cool conversation as a pastor. I think how my pastor life impacts chaplaincy. My boss at the hospital right now, and she's allowed spaces for me to use that pastoral role. We have a word and sacrament service that we do every once in a while. She's like, yeah, Tori, like use your pastor self here today. Or we have this moment of the staff gather and be able to pause, be able to acknowledge that the patients they've cared for that have died in their care, right? And it's the right bringing that that pastoral ministry into those moments for sure, with the staff. So.
I'm just sitting here thinking of so many different things. If I didn't have headphones on, you could see smoke coming out my ears.
In a good way?
Yeah, in a good way.
Is it a good smoke?
No, it's just kind of it's fascinating to me, because also, does being a chaplain help you kind of spot the nonsense that happens in a lot of church life? You know how churches and congregations can sometimes get off on things that aren't really essential to life, love, family, health, shalom. You know, they get off on these rabbit trails and spend so much time and energy, sometimes in conflict over things like carpet color. Does the chaplain work actually help keep you kind of centered in what are really essential in terms of who we are as human beings and as followers of Jesus and what matters most?
Yeah, I think so. Does this thing actually matter, right? Or there's always construction happening at our church, and it's the, all right, like, what do we need this to do right now? Like, let's pause. What do we need this to do, right? Yeah. It's asking the question of, all right, we're talking about, a hymnal supplement. Like, what Like, let's talk about the reasoning for that. Like, what's that going to bring to our time together as a community? And so, it's bringing us back to, all right, let's think about life together. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like refocusing on, all right, why are we here? What do we hope happens? And kind of a recentering a moment there. Mm-hmm. Something that you said earlier was about, you know, when something has happened in, whether it's in the hospital setting or, I mean, even the congregational setting, and the congregation is aware, you know, of things that you're carrying or might have an idea of what you're carrying. How do they care for you? I mean, you talked about the congregation is small, you're very integrated with one another. What does it look like for a congregation to care for their pastor in your experience?
Yeah. I think in this congregation, it's always interesting to think through that. This is the first Mennonite church I ever stepped foot into. I ever attended long-term. I attended here for 4 years through college and then was away for 6 years, and they asked me to come back and be their pastor. And so, So what does that look like when they already know me and we have these new, roles and pastoral boundaries to think through? What does it look like for them to care for me? It's the knowing that they're praying for me. I've had some diet changes over the past year. And so, it's them, the folks who often bring food in for coffee and fellowship time. It's them letting me know, yeah, we thought through that and we brought this for you today, or we cooked this recipe without dairy so that you could have it. And right. And so it's that just little things that let me know that they're thinking about and considering me as well. So.
Yeah, because sometimes being a pastor is this interesting role where you are leading, you have power and authority, as you talked about, but you're also doing church together. You're doing ministry mm-hmm. together. It's a mutual thing. And so it sometimes can be hard for congregations to know how to care for the pastor. It can also be hard for congregation or for pastors to like realize that some care from the congregation is also beneficial to the whole, right? Sometimes boundaries can be pretty, pretty firm there. So it's just mm-hmm. kind of helpful to hear about these things that are significant, but are also pretty, pretty basic: prayer, paying attention to food needs and that sort of thing.
So if you, in light of this conversation, what advice would you give to a brand new pastor?
Yeah, I think find your mentors, find your community that will care for you outside of the church, and have a good therapist or spiritual director, that you can depend on, and somebody told me, I asked this question at a convention maybe the special delegate assembly that we had in 2022, somebody who was retiring that I didn't know at all, but was like, you know, what advice would you give me as a new pastor? And she said, know that it's often not about you, and have a good support system, have a good therapist, spiritual director to tell you when it is about you. So I will pass that on, and give better words than what I was trying to say for that.
Yeah, no, that's some pretty solid advice. You know, I mean, Yes, it's not about you, but also sometimes it is. So you sometimes need someone to help you navigate the difference there. And I think also have some ability to laugh at yourself and with one another, because it's a vulnerable job being a pastor, for sure. Well, for those, I have one last question.
All right.
I think Michael's trying to wrap it up, but I have one more question.
No,
So for those who cannot take CPE, what resources would you recommend, whether that's a book, a webinar, someone who's been important to you? How can people kind of gather some information on the run?
I think, yeah, and it's a question that I, you know, still wrestle with even after taking CPE, but it's the problem of evil in the world, right? You're going to be engaging that all the time if you end up being a caregiver. And, right, all of the philosophical responses to that question, right, when you're sitting across from somebody, you need to throw those out the window. And so a book that really just... that I felt like my heart was seen in it, and gave me a lot of perspective on that, you know, theodicy, and answering that, that problem evil is, Raging with Compassion by John Swinton. It is, yeah, a good one for that.
We're writing it down. Yeah. That's why there's a pause. I've not read that book, so I'm excited to look that up and encourage other people who are listening to look that book up too. Just want to say thanks, Tori, for the conversation. Thanks for taking the time in what I imagine is a busy time doing both things and doing it well. So thank you for taking your time to talk with us today.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thanks all.